This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
My guest today, I was watching on Instagram, back in the days when I was on Instagram, and she had a great joke about therapy and TikTok.
I was watching my therapist the other day on TikTok, and oh yeah, my therapist is TikTok, so. And she was saying, she was like, Heather, would you talk to your 8-year-old self the way you have been talking to your adult self?
And it was, I'll be honest, it was a joke I was trying to crack myself. She cracked it. And I was like, I got to have her on the podcast. Seems interesting. She sells out a zillion theaters. She has a Netflix special. Did great. That's why what I was basing it on. She's here right now. Heather McMahon. All right. Well, let's start. We've never met.
Yes.
That I'm aware of.
No, we have not.
When did you start doing stand-up?
In high school, years ago. But like professionally, like 2017.
You've had the same personality since you were 3?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Full throttle.
And you said you lived in New York and LA.
Yeah. So after
and now Atlanta, how did you move to all these places and not be a comedian?
Okay, exactly. Got a theater degree, moved to New York right after, was doing UCB, was doing improv, sketch, right, stand up.
Then moved. How were you popular in the UCB circles?
Well, it's interesting. I was good and I did my thing, but I was not the typical UCB girl. Yeah. You know, I like makeup and hoops and a hair blowout, and I'm from the South and I lean into that. But I did well. And then I moved to LA, and then the UCB scene was just even more insane.
It's very snobby, if you don't know.
Very snobby.
Very clicky.
Very clicky. I lived right in Franklin Village, right across from the—
Right there.
From the spot.
Near SciTie as well, near Scientology.
Literally backed up to the Celebrity Scientology
Center.
Sure,
of course.
So, and then I branched off with a girl—
Maybe you caught some vapors.
Oh, no, I would literally walk by at night. I'd be like at La Poubelle across the street, and mm-hmm. I'd be like, I rebuke it in the name of Jesus. Like, I'm not fucking
great,
with it.
Great, 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 great.
Yeah. Then I had a writing partner that we met at UCB. We did like our 2-person show. We kind of did our own thing. And then unfortunately, I picked up and left LA because my dad died of cancer very abruptly. So then I moved home to Atlanta for the first time. And I was home figuring out my new normal. And then that's when I started doing, I was like, well, fuck doing sketch and improv and all that. I did characters online and then I started doing stand-up again. And then I moved to New York. And then I just recently moved back to Atlanta during the pandemic.
So when did you start doing well?
Like 2018.
Okay, so before the pandemic, before.
And then I started touring 2018, 2019, and then took a break, obviously, during
doing
the pandemic.
Doing clubs or doing, like, bigger places?
I would do clubs, and then I went right into theaters.
Great. Well, that's what it's watching you. You don't have any of the stand-up-y, like, you look like someone who came into it with a fan base, and you know what you like talking about,
mm-hmm.
and they know what they like hearing you talk about.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
It is.
Okay.
You don't have any of, there's no like gunk on you.
Okay.
You don't have any like club gunk.
I know. And I know that.
Especially from New York, where there's like a lot of heavy energy.
And I have friends, obviously, in comedy now they're sometimes like, oh, well, you know, you didn't come up in the club scene. I'm like, no, I did kind of like what the kids did on TikTok, but on Instagram years before that. It's like when people want to, I mean, Matt came up in the clubs, but like when people want to give Matt Rife shit about like the TikTok thing, I'm like, I basically did that on Instagram. I just put all my stand up, all of my sketches, everything, my characters on Instagram. And then it took off from there. But I've been doing like one woman shows forever. People just didn't know who the fuck I was.
Were they character-y?
Character-y, yeah.
Got it.
My first theater tour, I opened for myself as a character. Which was like,
and people hated it, right? They would boo. They would boo her off.
They would boo her off.
Bring on Heather.
Yeah. No. And then finally, like people were like, "You're doing way too much. Like, just get an opener. Like, because I'm an old theater kid, so I like really like to give people a
you
show.
Like building sets.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Everything.
I have a full costume. Uh huh.
Hot glue guns.
Oh, glitter everywhere.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you started doing well. And do you talk about how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 36 years old.
Great. So that's a decent age to succeed.
Uh-huh.
Like over 30,
yeah.
I think you have a shot at being a normal person. I've also seen it go both ways.
Right.
And it's, I think it's hard to maintain some humility when you're getting showered praise all the time. You strike me as
in your 30s?
Yeah. I think any age.
Okay.
It gets easier.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's still tempting to every, like, you see people like new, like there's a guy, Gabor Mate, who's who's like a, you know, ayahuasca psychiatrist. And he likes the
attention.
He likes the juice. And he's like 70 and was in the Holocaust. Might be 80. So like everyone's susceptible to like connecting and all that stuff. So it looks like you've maintained a normal life. And now you live in Atlanta with your husband.
And my mom.
And your mom. And in the same house?
Yep.
Great. I saw your mom on Instagram. Or no, I saw your mom on the Netflix. And she didn't. A lot of times mom sketches that can go a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
She held her own.
She's an icon.
Great.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was an icon. I just thought she held her own.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. She will love that feedback.
How is your general disposition? Are you anxious?
I've been anxious as of late just because I've got a lot of balls in the air and I feel a little discombobulated. Mm-hmm. But my general disposition is just honestly very joyful.
Yeah.
I giggle.
Always.
Always.
Great.
I am really glass half full. And it's funny because I'm married to like a very, like an Italian version of Larry David, like a very Italian, just
he's
like.
From Philly?
No, he's from New York. But just, you know, the world's against you. Everything's fucked. Yeah.
Everybody's fucking us.
And I'm literally like, it's all going to be okay. Like my catchphrase in life is just kind of like it's going to be fine. We're going to figure it out. It's going to be fine.
Okay, well, that was one of the things I wanted to speak to you about. Based on your Instagram, there is an element of, I think, any kind of female
just whatever, let it lay it
influencer,
out.
I don't know what the fucking term is.
Mm-hmm.
There is a level of optimism that I kind of like, you were saying the other day, like, if you dream it.
All I want to say is, she believed she could, so she motherfucking did.
It can, and it's like, Heather.
That's me being sarcastic, though.
Oh, thank God.
No, that is the whole bit. Like, okay. I on my podcast, people call in and I basically give them like horrific unsolicited advice.
Oh,
so
great.
These clips that these like this my social media
okay, so
people
you're
become.
Fun of your...
I'm making fun of she believed she could. So she did.
Okay, good.
I mean, now,
like, no, you gotta be funny to get a Netflix special.
No. That is me being completely.
Thank you.
Completely sarcastic.
Okay.
And the reason I make vision boards is whenever I'm hungover on like New Year's Day, I'll take an edible. And I just like to craft. I like to scrapbook and doodle.
This isn't even about dreams or manifestation. It's just about crafting and glue.
I'll take an edible. I'll craft. So what happened was a couple years ago, I made this vision board. And I was like, you know, like kind of thoughtful in it, but I was high as shit.
Yeah.
And then I put all this stuff up. And I really enjoy just like the task of doing it. I enjoy to be, that's my quiet time to turn my brain off. And then I put it up in my office. And then like a couple years later, I was like, looked at it. And I was like, oh, fuck, this shit's starting to come true. So now it's just something that I make every year. And it's almost like a joke. Like, I don't believe in vision boards.
Okay.
I don't believe in like, oh, okay. Like, you
know.
Do
you believe in astrology?
Fuck no.
Okay.
Because I think astrology is actually from the dark place, you know?
Interesting. Are you Jesus? Are you Jesus?
Yeah, I'm Jesus. And I have a strong faith in the Lord. But I also just feel like, I don't know. I mean, I work my fucking ass off.
Yeah. And you also talented and it seems like you probably were where it's you're getting a lot of resistance and then you just like and then it just opens up.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's pretty cool.
It was interesting because in the comedy world, I always just spoke from my point of view and perspective. And I knew that like I was just going to talk to women. And I was like, that's who I'm going to hone in on. Right. Because those are my girls.
So you specifically.
Specifically. And then.
Did you always get along with women?
Yeah.
Great.
But I was also like, I mean, I was in a sorority. I fucking thrived. I loved it. I thought the sisterhood was fantastic.
Yeah, I never watch you and think you're lying.
Yeah, okay.
That's good. I don't like, this is bullshit. She's a dark cynic, whatever.
Yeah, but I love.
But I also think you believe in astrology. So that's what I thought. Now I'm getting a fuller picture.
Mm-hmm. No. Complete character. Bad.
Okay.
No, I think like people who believe in like, I mean, is there some like godly part of it that connects? Sure. But do I think that, you know, Geminis are like all alcoholics? No, I don't.
Yeah.
But no, I'm a girl's girl. I mean, I hate to like even put a label on it, but I also can like sit around and, you know, sit in the back of a club and just talk shit.
You
with
also,
the dudes.
Like you and your dad were close.
Very close.
Yeah. So like that's a different, that, I don't know if that's a girl's girl, but like that's a different, that's interesting that you picked a quadrant of the audience.
honestly, I was just my material. Like, I was just talking about my own shit.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't care if the guys liked me. I was like, whatever. And then I, you know, was just dialed into stand up. And then now all these guys come to the show and they're like, this is fucking great. Like, my whole new hour is about, I try to explain to guys, I'm like, let me be the middle point for you to understand why your wife or your girlfriend thinks about X, and I'll help explain it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I was wondering what
get people laid and bring everybody together.
Yeah. We do get a lot of people laid. I was wondering what your new hour is, because the last one was so biographical.
I want to paint a picture of what baby Heather looked like, okay?
Yes. I mean, I am a storyteller, so this is all about, though, my first year of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, like, this international wedding I had, the things I learned on my 30-day honeymoon. It's really my observation of all the nuances that happen in your first year of marriage.
Great. And how is it going?
It's great.
How were your relationships before you got married?
Relationships, like, with people? Good. I mean, I dated a bunch of losers in college that were not worth my time. But I met my husband, like, when I first moved to New York. We were like 22, and he walked in a bar, and I was like, that's who I'm going to marry. Like, it was very.
Really?
Yeah. I know that sounds weird.
No, but it.
I just knew. But I think it's because I had a healthy relationship with my dad.
Yeah.
So I never really put up with shit. Like, I had this one boyfriend in college who cheated on me.
He didn't say a word. You saw him and said, I'm going to marry that guy.
I know this sounds like this is bullshit.
No, I don't. I believe you. I'm just wondering.
I was in a bar with my dear friend, Christina. She works with me now. And that's how I met him, because my girlfriend, Christina, grew up with my husband, Jeff. So he walks in a bar to meet us. And I said, who is that? That's who I'm going to marry. And Christina goes, Jeff? And I was like, yeah, you know him? She's like, yeah, that's Jeff, one of our buddies from high school. And that was it. Now, it wasn't until a couple months afterwards, he had no idea that I was interested in him. And I literally had to tell him at a bar, I was like, I think you're cute. And the next thing you know, we're like, you know, tongue to tongue doing the damn thing. But yeah, that was it.
Why did you think that?
I can't explain it. I just had this gut feeling when he walked in. I saw him and I was like, that's it.
Never had it before.
Never had it before. And when I look back, we took a group photo that night. He looked.
You're staring at him from across the group.
He's so ill. No, I'm on one side of the photo. He's on the other. He looks like he'd just gone through like radiation chemo. He was like kind of jaundiced. The hair was thinning. He did not look well in this photo. But I don't know what it was. When he walked in, I was like, that's it. And we've been together, honestly, solidly for like 13 years. And I moved out to LA.
You cheat on him a ton, though.
No. Honestly, I haven't. Like, I haven't.
You have to tell us if you have.
I know. He's just like my bud. Like, we have a good time together. We really, you know, I mean, marriage is hard. Don't get me wrong. Relationships are hard. But when I moved to LA, we had been dating a year. And I said, listen, I got to move to LA. Like, I know that's the next step. And he goes, go. I never want you to resent me. Like, I want you to go. And we stayed together the whole time.
So he has good ideas about relationships.
Yeah.
Just on his person, like, just has it on him. Like, he's like, yeah, I know if you don't, you'll resent me. And like, because that's a pretty advanced observation to make.
Yeah. He just said, I know that this is what you want to do. Because the minute I met him, I was like, I'm doing comedy. I'm stand up. I'm do this. Like, I'm going to be on SNL. This is what I'm going to do. Da, 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 da. And he just said, oh, all right. She knows what she wants. Like, go for it. I mean, it takes a very, I think, specific man who's very confident in himself to be like, yeah, I'm going to let her get up on stage and fucking roast me all day. Or just talk about like the most embarrassing shit
does
in my
work?
Life. Yes. He does like real estate and finance.
Okay.
Yeah, he's semi-retired right now because mama's doing well.
Sure. Retire.
Yeah.
Now's the time, Jeff. In your 30s, what better time to retire?
Exactly.
We're going to have him on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can't pee on planes. That's not significant enough for this podcast.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
Show some goddamn respect. I want kids, but no desire for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
That is a biggie.
Okay.
What do you mean? You meaning you want it? Because I had a buddy of mine say one time about a girl, whatever. He goes, a clique of girls. He goes, they want to be a picture of a mom. They don't want to be a mom.
No, quite opposite.
Okay.
I want the relationship with the family. I want the child, but I don't have any desire, like this burning, nurturing feeling inside of me that I need to have a baby in my womb. I'm not craving, like, I'm 36, turning 37.
You don't want to be pregnant.
I have no desire to be pregnant. I mean, I already have my own infertility issues, so I think that probably has put like a weird dark seed in the back of my brain. But I just don't have this like connection or craving with like, I need the baby.
Do you want You want milk coming out of your boobs?
I wouldn't mind. I think that could be fun.
I've literally never considered that. Like, do I want to be milked?
The milking part I'm fine with, right? I don't want to rip tip to taint. I did IVF and all that shit, and it really fucked me up hormonally. And coming off of that was the wildest, gnarliest ride of my life.
You talked about it in the Netflix that you were on testosterone.
I swear to God, I was on testosterone for like a week, and by like day seven, I looked like Guy fucking Fieri.
I was on testosterone.
I'm fascinated by what testosterone does to women.
It makes you horny and angry. And I said it in the special, it makes you so fucking horny, so angry.
That's what it's like to be a man.
That is what it's like to be a man.
Those are our two emotions.
Literally, I was like, I get it. I get it now.
And I want to look every man here in the audience tonight right in the eyes. And I want you to know I see you. I hear you, okay? It is bullshit the way that people have been trying to put us down recently. They have no fucking idea what we go through.
I mean, I would just have these rages. I would road rage. I felt fucking nuts. Like it. And so after you do the testosterone for like a month and a half, 2 months, then I had to be put on estrogen and progesterone. It was like a mixture of that. So there, because I'm full estrogen dominant, which I like.
We couldn't tell.
Yeah.
No one could tell. Just on sight.
Yeah. I was on the testosterone. Then I had to be on these vaginal suppositories where you're putting all these drugs just in your vagina. It's soaking in through your uterus.
You're going in your, you have to put it in your vagina?
Like a suppository. Yes. And you'd have to do two a day, and you'd have to literally clench your pussy and like pray that it would stay up there. And you just felt gross, and your hormones are such a wild ride. Then I had to do the rounds of shots to get the eggs. After multiple rounds, I think I did three rounds of shots. I was only able to get one embryo. So I have an embryo. I know I have a little girl on ice, which is a wild thing to know that, like, specifically I know the sex of the baby. So I have this like desire to be a mom, and I love the family aspect, but I don't have any desire to go back and do IVF again. I don't care about being pregnant. I just want somebody to hand
Would
me like
you
a 7-year old.
To do that to have to get pregnant, you'd have to do most of the hormones
again? Yes. Most likely.
Yeah.
And even if I took the embryo and decided, okay, I don't want to risk it on me because I only have one embryo and the chances are really low, I'm going to put it in a surrogate because they have a better chance because of the way their shit works. I still only have one embryo. So even if I want other children, I would then have to do IVF again to get another round of eggs, period. So yeah. I only have one shot as of right now.
Don't waste it. Good thing your husband's retired. building up semen as we speak.
Yeah.
Have you prepared yourself for the possibility that you won't be able to have a kid?
Yes. I mean, I've always thought that like I could adopt. I would love to adopt.
Oh, all right. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I would be totally open to adoption. I do think that men need to have a connection with something that is biologically theirs. I mean, my husband's been very open to it. He's like, I just want to at least try to have our own first, which I totally get. Yeah. I mean, I understand that. But
it's strange that a guy would pitch like, maybe we should fuck. Yeah. We should probably fuck just in case it works.
In case. Yeah. But I'm also in a really weird part in my career. Like, I am a little bit of a late bloomer, like being almost 40. And I'm in this weird spot where everyone's like, look at the success. Like all this shit's happening. And they're like, so when are you going to become a mommy?
I know.
And it's fucking bullshit, dude. Like, and that's the pressure. I know I only have, if I don't get physically pregnant myself tomorrow, I only have a short window to at least do IVF again. I'm trying to do all this shit. I'm on the road. It tears up your body. I already feel like, you know, every Sunday when I fly home, I feel like an NFL athlete. Like I've just been beat up all fucking weekend.
Yeah.
And then I'm supposed to like also somehow do that pregnant. Like, you know, we saw, I mean, good for Ali Wong for doing it and crushing it and doing those specials. And Amy Schumer did her HBO documentary about it. And I'm just like, but they were already so far ahead in their career. Like I'm at that point where it's like shit's popping off, but I don't know if I physically have it in me right now to give somebody a baby.
Yeah, and can the market take another pregnant female comedian?
They cannot.
Can they? Can we bear one more?
Well, it's funny. My audience is like, we can't wait to see you pregnant. Or they're like, we can't wait to see you in the middle of the night, you know, on the baby monitor, just losing your shit. Because my audience like they want to be in this with me. You know what I mean?
Do you worry about oversharing?
All the time. There's no boundaries. But I also, like, in this fucking day and age, I have a podcast. I'm giving people so much fucking material.
Well, that's what I mean.
I will wake up in the middle of the night with, like, fucking hot sweats that I've shared too much about all of my life. But then I'm also like, well, fuck, this is it. this is our job. Like my job in comedy is I can only, again, I speak from my point of view, like what I've been through.
Okay. So you would adopt. That's good. Because I, my first thing was when you were talking about fertility, I was like, I don't think I would want to adopt. And then if you said, why not? I think if you really pushed me, I'd be like, because I don't believe that it'll work emotionally.
Really?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm one of 10 brothers, sisters. By the way, it doesn't work emotionally.
Right.
But like, I wouldn't buy that I could just be like, no, those scenes where they're like, you're my son.
Uh-huh.
And you're, it would be hard for me to believe that that is as good a connection as blood. And you know how I feel about blood connections.
Right, so, right, right.
So I'm interested to, I think maybe women are just more apt at love.
I think agape love is the most beautiful kind of love, where it is outside of yourself. It's like a friendship love.
Is that a plant medicine?
Yes, it sure is.
I haven't taken somehow?
Okay, this is going to sound fucked up, but I think about like people handing me my pets, and I know this is totally different. I know humans and animals are totally different, but I think about how much I love these fucking animals. I'm like, so you're telling me if somebody handed me-
The minute you're handed them-
Oh my God, I just want to love them.
And you saw your husband-
Uh-huh.
I think Wonder Box is, you're very possessive.
Okay, yeah.
No, but you saw your husband, you're like, I love him.
Uh-huh.
And Hannah Dog, I love you.
So you're telling me if you handed me a child and you said, that's yours, I'm not going to be obsessed and love that thing. It's something that's been on my heart for a long time, that if I needed to go that route, I'd be absolutely open to it. And I have friends that are adopted who have beautiful relationships in their family. So
yeah. And I mean, the opening joke from Blocks is like,
So I get a pit bull named Keith, and everybody told me Keith's going to be your best friend. And I got to say, maybe my ninth best friend.
So I'm not good at it, but
I'm good at loving things and loving people.
Yes.
And I'm very sensitive towards it. Like
that's an amazing character trait that I'm not saying like you should be grateful, but that's a great thing to be.
The friends that I have are friends that have stayed with me. I'm not the kind of person, like, I don't cut people out of my life. That's why I think this relationship, you know, with my in-laws is so stressful, because there's never been a relationship where I haven't been able to like, listen, we can agree to disagree, but that we can't find a mutual respect. And that's what's really challenging for me, because I'm fairly easy to get along with.
Yeah. I'm worried that something horrible is going to happen because life is too good.
Yes. I always knew as a little kid that something was going to happen amongst my family. Like when my dad died, I saw it coming, even though he died very quickly. I remember looking.
How do you see it coming? Please tell me.
Okay. This is going to sound really fucked up.
Please.
Okay. So I was living in LA. I knew something was wrong with my dad. And I just had this weird premonition.
Intuitively.
And my dad, the joke is my dad started to lose weight. And I was like, there's no fucking way. Like, you're dying of something. And he got misdiagnosed. My dad was a heavy set Southern guy, but very healthy. He was a pilot. So he had to get tested through the FAA like every year. And they'd be like, yeah, you're just a big old boy from the South.
Right.
But you've got perfect blood pressure, perfect everything, like nothing wrong. The Thanksgiving before he died at Christmas. So Thanksgiving of 2015. Something told me not to go home, and I regret it, and it fucks me up all the time, because that was the last holiday I would have spent with my dad.
And you were told you felt not to go home.
Yes. I would always go home for at least Thanksgiving. I mean, I'd go home for Christmas. I had a great relationship with my family, but for some reason, something told me, just stay back in LA. Like, don't make the trek. Just do it. Just hang out with your friends. And we had this big Friendsgiving. And had I gone home, I would have seen, because I was the outsider coming in. My mom, my sister were at home, and they would have, you know, they were like, we're doing the best we can. They misdiagnosed him with diabetes. This is so weird. That's why he's losing the weight. But I knew that if I would have jumped in, I would have been like, something's not going on. I'm not saying that they weren't doing everything they could, but the outsider coming back in being like, whoa, this guy's really fucking thin. Like, what's going on? Because at the end of the day, there was still nothing we could have done. He died of pancreatic cancer.
When you find pancreatic cancer, you're fucked. Yeah.
So then 2 weeks before Christmas, I fly to my friend's wedding in Puerto Rico, and my parents were supposed to come. This is my best friend in the world. And they said, hey, your dad's in the hospital because of gallstones. They think it's just gallstones or gallbladder. They're probably going to remove it. And I knew. I told my husband. I said, my dad's dying of cancer. I fucking know it. And Jeff was like, you're crazy. Your brain always goes there. Like, that's not it. I said, Jeff, life is too good right now. I just know that this is going to happen. So do you remember?
And back then, it wasn't even that good.
It wasn't even that good. No.
Looking back,
no,
it wasn't too good.
I was doing like a one-woman show. snow off fucking fountain, you know? It was fucking terrible. Cool. So you remember that scene from, did you ever watch The Comeback?
No, but okay. I'm aware of it.
There's a scene on The Comeback where Lisa Kudrow finds out that her makeup artist.
Did you watch The Comeback? Woman doing a one-woman show on Fountain? Was that relevant to you? Go ahead.
So Mickey, who is Lisa Kudrow's Valerie Cherish as a character, is her like fabulous gay best friend makeup artist. She finds out that he has cancer. So they go to an episode, they go to a improv class at the Groundlings, and she gets on stage and all she can say is cancer, cancer, cancer. All right. It's the best scene ever.
Yeah.
I'm on a flight watching The Comeback, about to land in Atlanta, Georgia, back home, where my sister's going to pick me up from the airport. And it was that episode. And I swear to God, it was the universe, like, telling my brain, you already know that you're about to find out your dad has cancer. This is just the universe, like, setting you up for it. It was a God thing, whatever. My sister picks me up from the airport, and I say, I know dad has cancer. Tell me how bad it is. And she's like, fuck, I told mom not to tell you. We wanted you to enjoy the wedding. There's nothing we can do. It's bad. Like, I am so pissed. I said, mom didn't tell me anything. And I just knew. And she was like, how'd you know? I was like, God told me. I just know. And then it was a week later, he died. So I don't know. It's fucked up. I mean, I feel like when you lose somebody like that, you just are constantly in the back of your mind. Like, I told Jeff, my husband, I was like, life is really good right now. It feels good. I'm just waiting for that other shoe to drop, you know?
We're going to take some calls, and you'll tell people based on their voice whether they have cancer or not.
Okay. I can feel it.
Craig,
I can literally
feel
Seattle, it.
You're on the air.
And it's glioblastoma. Yeah.
On average, it takes about 30 days for a person to break their New Year's resolution. Took me 3. But if you know, I'm an overachiever, guys, even when it comes to breaking resolutions. So if saving money was on your 2024 list, your odds aren't looking that great. Luckily, I have a 100% guaranteed way to save you money this year. Just switch to Mint Mobile. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. I was spending so much on the other, on one of the big guys, and I actually switched to Mint Mobile. I've talked about it here before. I called the number. I switched my phone. I have 2 phones. I switched both my phones. And I switched my mama's phone because I pay my mama's cell phone plan. And I can watch how much data she's using. I'm saving. I got to be saving $1,000 this year. I don't want to get too specific about my financial situation. But it's between $500 and $1,000. Could be as it's bare minimum $500. Top line, a G. So, you know what I mean? Look, I'm notoriously cheap. I've talked about being cheap. Follow my lead on this. Switch. I felt no pain. It has been seamless. Same number. Same everything. I swear to you, I lied before. I told you I lied. Not lying. I couldn't. You guys, I have too much integrity to lie this well. I probably could, let's be honest. But I'm not. It's our friend Ryan Reynolds. We've talked about me and Jim Jeffrey. We talk about him. He's never coming on. Let's be honest. He's never coming on this podcast. But Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan for just $15 a month. Say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Been there, was there 3 months ago. Switch. New life. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/NEAL. That's mintmobile.com/NEAL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/NEAL. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Mint Mobile. Ryan Reynolds is never going to be friends with any of us, but he did give us a nice break on some phones. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, new year, new you. Who are you trying to be this year? Trying to be mentally healthy? You going to do the New Year's thing where you order a gym membership that you don't use? Don't do it. Go to the mind gym. Go to the emotion gym instead of lying to yourself about what you're going to do with your body. Go inside, buddy. Then you won't really care about your body as much. You know, what I'm talking about is therapy. And I don't even know what episode this is going to air on, but I almost promise you that we're going to talk about therapy and how it helped them. Again, it doesn't have to. People that go, you don't have to be in chaos or crisis or have some giant thing that happened to you that you need to deal with in therapy. It can be that, but it doesn't have to be. It can just be therapy as a general health practice that will make you feel better day to day. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BETTERHELP.com/NEAL today to get 10% off your first month. That's BETTERHELP.com/NEAL. Go to therapy. Use BetterHelp.
Am I the only one that finds the idea of new year, new me to be incredibly stressful? Am I the only one? Like, overnight, I'm supposed to become a gym rat, have a six pack, say no to good food and good. Look, I was going to say a word I shouldn't use. Yeah, I don't want to have to be a new. I like me. So I don't want to have to do new year, new me. Like, I have a lot of good habits. I'd like to keep it going. So this year, I'm trying something different. New year, same me. Because F expectations, F them. MeUndies wants you to feel empowered whether you love the gym or love laying on the ground. I love both. Who doesn't love laying on the ground? I spent 4 hours today just laying on the ground. MeUndies Move Me collection is soft and moisture wicking, ready to support your movements, big and small. And if you want to lounge, you'll love their buttery soft undies, loungewear, and PJs. I got them, and they're the undies. Mwah, mwah. You can hear it. If you're not watching this, I'm doing the chef's kiss because this is a nice underwear. Doing the fake Italian, the Mamma Mia. That's the one of spicy meatball for underwear. It's soft. It's soft. It's soft. It is buttery is the right word. I rub corn on my where it is because it's so buttery. I spin corn. No, I don't. That's disgusting. From all black classics to fun expressive prints, MeUndies has a look for everyone. Plus, they come in sizes extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for everybody. Kick off the new year comfier than ever and get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies, MeUndies.com/NEAL. That's MeUndies.com/NEAL for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. I might have been kissing you. You don't know. This is for audio and video. I stand by everything that happened here. All right, how many?
I did not expect to go through that whole story.
No, I'm interested.
I'm glad we're doing
this. Fuck. In intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested how often it happens to you and the level. On Reddit, I follow like mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Shamanism, just sort of, you know, I'm in the ayahuasca world. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's great. Take that journey.
Sure.
But
thanks for calling it a journey, you bitch.
Take that ride, Neil. Whatever you need to do.
Thank you.
When I was a little kid, I like really envisioned and saw like how my life was going to go in a sense of I kind of knew that this was always going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like when, I mean, this is.
It never happens in the right order, though, because I
never
feel the same way. I feel the same way. Like I've gotten everything I wanted in life, not how. And not when I thought I would get it. So that allows me to still feel sorry for myself. No, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm still like, yeah, but it's all happened.
It does all happen in a weird way. But like when there were like really low points in my career or like when you're just fucking hustling and grinding, I never really had a doubt. I just always knew. I was like, even as a little kid, when kids would play school, I would play Jay Leno. I would make my sister sit in a chair and interview me about like all of my projects.
You'd walk around and go, hi, you guys. Hi, you guys. Yeah, hi, you guys.
Literally, I was like ready to be like called over to the couch. I know. Now, I haven't been on late night yet, but I always just kind of like knew that shit was going to happen. So when all my other friends who are successful now were like, always, they're like, why are you being so like optimistic about shit? I was like, I don't know. I just feel like it's going to happen. I'll figure it out. I know now after losing my dad in the way that I did, like, I think the universe prepared me so that the blow would be a little softened because life happens. I don't believe like, you know, it's just hard right now to not be on the mindset that train, like something bad's going to happen. I'm going to lose my mom, my husband, like something bad's going to happen because life is cooking with gas right now.
That's kind of your default, your protection.
My protection.
And is it a different tone than the dad one? Because that's the hard thing is once you get one intuition,
right,
then you got to go like, we got to get chicken wings. Right. I can't explain why.
No, I'm not the kind of person where I'm like, these are the lucky numbers. Let's play the scratch off tonight. Yeah. No, I'm not none of that. I'm not a gambler, anything like that. But I definitely feel something in my gut like something seems a little off. I mean, I just think I'm anxious. I mean, fuck, I'm playing a big show this weekend, then I'm shooting my next special. I also am in a state right now where everything that I've asked for is now happening, and I feel the weight of the world, A, not to fuck it up, B, not to disappoint other people. I have a lot of people that rely on me right now financially for jobs, and I'm like just doing the best I can to keep my head above water.
You can't worry about that.
I know I can't.
Like, you can't worry about being like the cow, the milk, you know what I mean? Like, you can't, because it has to be natural from what you want to do.
I am such a people pleaser, and it is these like conversations that I have with myself where I'm like, if somebody's having a bad day backstage or whatever, it was a tough travel day, I like wear that. And I have done shows through COVID, the stomach bug, fucking an ovarian cyst rupturing. Like, I just get up and I'm a show pony and I do it. And there are days where I get a little pissed off. Like, if somebody else on the crew is having a bad day, I'm like, I don't have days that I can have a bad day. If I feel like shit, if my life's falling apart, I still got to go out and razzle fucking dazzle, right?
Here's the punchline. You make 30 times more than the highest paid person.
No, I know.
So fucking cheer up.
I know.
They're a show pony.
I know.
Eat the fucking giant carrot. No, I'm with you though.
But that's why I also feel like I hold that shit to the chest. Like, people are like, you never like showing any emotion with shit. I'm like, because I don't want to complain. Like, I'm very grateful for where I'm at. But there are days where I'm just like, I do feel like I got to make sure that, you know, the show.
Yeah, but they didn't, again, none of their people will get jobs after you.
Do I have to pay you for this hour? Because we're really diving into this shit.
I know I sell ads. That's I sell ads against your content.
Great.
So it's going to be fun. No, but I'm wondering they're going to work after you. They worked before you. Yep. They're going to work after you. We're all just flying past each other. Right. Like, especially if it's tour managers or whatever. It's like they've been on a lot of, you don't have to tour all the time.
You're right.
Like, you can't worry about it. You can't worry about bus drivers. It's like, that's the gig. And you're dependent on material.
Yeah.
So we all have some kind of boss. And our boss is the audience and material. And it's like, hey, material, any material?
No, literally, that's why I'm like, okay, well, what is the next foray? It's like, yeah, having a family, starting a family. So I can like experience that. And you know, I'm constantly thinking, I'm like, okay, what's the next tour? All right. Well, the first one was an introduction to myself. I talked about my childhood, my dad dying. This one's all about my first year of marriage and all, and the relationships. The next one, I'm like, well, I've never really done my mom. So I'm like, is it this mother-daughter relationship shit next? Because everybody else has done the, I've had a baby, I'm pregnant. Like, I'm constantly thinking, what's the next thing?
Yeah. And then also, like, if you film next week, and when does it come out, and we have a new hour by then, and can you tour, can you put tickets on sale when that hour comes out? And like, I'm in the same exact boat.
And
it's never going to end. That's the other thing, is I realize, like, even if I get the next hour together, then there's an hour and you're like, fuck.
And then on top of that, when you're like doing the weekly podcast, and then I have to be funny on TikTok and social media, and that's where I got my start. So I enjoy that. I really enjoy just being goofy and giggly.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you do the podcast, which is also like another weird love, but it's like, you're coming up with 3 hours of new material a week.
Yeah.
And there are days where I feel like my brain is ping ponging all over the place. Now, the block where I was like, I can't pee on airplanes is not like a germ thing. I literally, in the last 2 weeks, I have felt so almost out of body. Like, I felt discombobulated. I would go into an airplane bathroom and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not at my seat, or I'm not in the bathroom, I'm at my seat. Oh my God, am I peeing at my seat? Like, what the fuck? Where am I? And I realized, somebody was like, that's disassociating. Like, you're so, and I think it's just because I'm really fucking tired.
Yeah.
I'm in a lot of places right now. And so I would literally like have to grab the stall in the bathroom on the airplane and be like, where am I? Am I okay? I am actually peeing in the bathroom right now, which was like a weird thing.
You were peeing in the
seat. I was peeing in the seat. I'm Delta Diamond, so please don't take that away from me.
It is stressful.
And again, never want to seem ungrateful. I love what I do. Doing touring is the most fun thing in the world.
Yeah.
But there are days where I'm like, I feel beat up.
Well, it's physically wearying.
Physically. So rough. And then when you're in 6 different cities and, you know, 6 days, you're like, this is nuts.
Yeah. I woke up one day and I had no idea what city I was in. Like, it took me so long to even realize, like, what year is it?
Yeah.
Where in my life am I?
And then you're at a Walgreens, and then like somebody offers you a blunt in the Walgreens. You're like, I'm in Cincinnati. Yep. I know exactly where I am.
And it's an employee.
Yep.
Uh-huh. I know the specific Walgreens.
Yep.
That is wearying. How do you handle stress?
I smile, and then I shut down. And I shut down, and then I have, like, every 2 weeks, I have, like, an afternoon where I kind of, like, lose my shit, and then I'm good.
How's that? What's that look like?
It's me crying in my car by myself. Because I don't want to burden anybody else with my stress. Because again, I don't want other people to see me sweat because I don't want them to feel like I'm ungrateful, or I just know that, like, I want to have a rough day by myself.
And you've earned it. And do you
yeah,
feel?
I think I have. I needed to hear that, Neil.
Smoking weed and drinking, and it does that. What
doesn't really do anything for me. Honestly, when I really shut down, I'm a very extroverted person, but I've noticed because being on the road is so overstimulating, when I come home, I need a day, and I really am not getting a single day off. Because that's what people don't understand. When you're traveling, yeah, you're flying home on a Sunday. You did a show in Sacramento. It takes you forever to get fucking home. Then I got to go home and be a wife. I got to entertain my mom. I got to deal with everything else. Then I'm doing the podcast. I'm doing script notes, whatever the fuck I'm doing Monday, Tuesday, and then I'm back on the road. There is no just one day to be quiet. And I know everybody listening who's got kids is like, well, wait till you have kids. You'll never have a day off. But when you're literally, you know, most people are Monday through Friday. And then they're like, when my agents text me and they're like, happy Friday. I'm like, fuck you, bitch. This is my Tuesday. Like, yeah. I'm just getting started. I've got six shows tonight.
Yeah. And the other thing with kids is you can give them a tablet.
You can give them a tablet. You can get a babysitter.
Yeah, where it's like the things you have to do are, they're booked in there. You can't get out of it.
Also,
you can't give 1,000 people in a theater a tablet.
Can't give them a tablet. And also, it's always front facing, right? So it's not like, I mean, sometimes when I'm like writing and shit, I can be quiet in my own thoughts, but everything is me like performing or me being frontward facing.
Is it, so with watching the TikToks the wine isn't stress relief? Because I assume that's why people drink, is anxiety.
No, honestly, I like a glass of red wine after a show. I'm not a really big drinker.
Got it.
Weed, I'll take an edible and get giggly and goofy, I don't need it. It's not a vice.
Okay.
Now, when I'm on vacation, you know, your girl likes a white wine.
Sure.
But I'm not a, it doesn't stress relieve me. Honestly, I like to take magnesium at night, put on compression socks and let my ankles de-swell. And that's what feels good. And then I watch 6 hours of like cringeworthy TikTok. That is what decompresses me.
I love the socks.
Yeah. When you wear heels on stage, it really fucks you up. Like, I've threw out my back in April, and now I'm like, okay, maybe I got to just lean back into the sneakers.
No, Ron DeSantis told me. I'm unable to confront people other than my family, even if someone has really done me wrong. I like it.
Okay. I'm able to have real talks with my husband, my mom, my sister. Like, we can hash it out. But there are probably people that I should have cut out of my life a long time ago. It's very hard for me to have any confrontation. Cause I'm like, we're going to figure it out. It takes a lot to really get me rattled, like really genuinely upset. And I'm around a lot of hot-headed New Yorkers. So they're always popping off. So I'm like, whatever, let them deal with it.
Yeah.
But I'm always like, ugh, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. But there are moments where my husband's been like, you need to have a fucking backbone on this. And he'll say, I know this makes you uncomfortable, but you need to fucking say what you need to say to this person. And I will tiptoe around it all day long because I just don't have the problem is really, Neil, I don't have the fucking energy to do it. So when something happens, I'm like, we'll figure it out because I don't have the energy to like beef with someone. I just don't.
See, that's what's funny is I have so much energy.
I know you do.
endless energy for
confrontation
and
it eats me alive
and like righteousness,
mm-hmm.
and like what kind of code does that person have.
Ooh.
And I thought we had an agreement, mm-hmm. about a code, even though we never did. I assumed we did. How could you not? And I also, there's a thing Arthur Miller said, fruitful conflict.
Okay.
I'm a fan of a fruitful conflict. Because I think you can cover a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. If I could give you some unsolicited advice, if
please,
you have to call somebody, write it out.
Yeah.
Do bullet points like this. Before, put it on, don't text to them. Write it down on a piece of paper,
uh-huh.
and go over the things and figure out the best way to communicate it before you send it. Or before you say it. So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. My sister's a criminal defense attorney, and she's always like, I don't want you talking in circles. She said that before, too. She's like, write it down in bullet points so that you get your what you need to get across, but then be shut the fuck up. That's my problem. I can't shut the fuck up because I'm always trying to find a resolution.
You let people off the hook.
All the fucking time. It is a major problem. There are so many times that I should have put my foot down and I'm like, and in a weird way, I kind of like observe and I just keep it in a vault. But here's what's going to happen, Neil. I'm going to lose my shit on this person. It's going to be, I'm going to let it go. And then we're going to have a real problem.
But that's, yes.
And I know that I need to snip shit in the bud before it gets to that point.
Are you good with forgiving people?
Yes, I forgive people probably too quickly. Because the amount of energy it takes me to not like you, the amount of energy it takes for me to store that emotion of like, I'm sitting at home and I'm stewing. I mean, my husband's favorite thing is to be like, that person wronged me in seventh grade, fuck Tony or whatever it is. He eats that shit up. And that's also, I think, like a family thing too. Like they, you know, he's a New Yorker, they enjoy the confrontation. I'm not like that. I'm like, you got an issue with me? Let's just squash it. Like, tell me what's going on so we can, I am fine with saying I'm sorry.
These families are like governments.
Yes.
They're like, what is your system of government?
Yeah.
And it's like, our system of government is called retribution. We've always done it. We're always going to continue to do it. And it's not, who knows who started it? All my family's like Irish fucking maniacs. Mm-hmm. So it's old.
It's so
old. No one wants to change a system of government. You're like, we can't go from socialism to we're this.
Right. I'm like, can we at least vote on this shit? And they're like, nope, this is it.
Nah, we don't even have the system set up. We don't, it's not a democracy. That's a hard one. Even how about with work?
I can put my foot down with work. I can. But the problem is I have a lot of friends that work with me because again, I'm very much so like my father. I want everybody to be together. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of joy in watching other people succeed. I'm not a competitive person. I'm really not. I'm competitive with myself. That is the only person I'm competitive with. So I really want everybody to be together. And I'm like, is everyone having fun? Like, I really enjoy having all my chickens together.
So if you have a good killer show,
mm-hmm.
that's only part of the thing that affects your mood. Like if you have a good show, but somebody got into an argument backstage mm-hmm. before or after, you're as aware of that as you are of the show.
Yes.
Wow.
I am. But the show, as long as like, you know, as long as the show is great, then I'm still on a high, but then I'll go back and lay in bed at night and think like, how can I resolve this? And I realize I can't fix people. I got to let people do their fucking thing. But it's constantly an observation in the back of my mind. And the problem is I also am around a lot of stubborn people. So I will go to the table and be like, can you fix this with this person? Can you do this with this? And when they don't, and it's just like, I'm constantly getting disappointed.
And you don't then hold that against them. You don't go like, I asked you to fucking solve this.
In the back of my mind, it's eating away at me. But yeah, I know that the show must go on. I'm like, we still got to go do shit.
Well, no, but that would make me just like not want to work with the person.
That's
where you, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. No, yeah, but that's fine. I mean, again, I think you have to give people a chance.
Yeah.
And then if they then still decide not to do it, then it's like, look, man, I need to have some boundaries.
And I have learned to stick up for myself. But the biggest thing, especially like with family shit or whatever, I finally was like, I work too hard to be this disrespected. I'm now starting to say like, I'm not going to let you disrespect me. And that is because I always just again, I'm like, oh, people want to talk shit, whatever, in one ear, not the other. But now I'm like, this is now disrespectful, even if it's a work thing to my business, to this, to my family, to whatever. I'm drawing a line in the sand. My publicist yesterday, love Sam. She sat me down. And she was like, you're being too fucking nice. She goes, so many people ask shit of you and you are not asking enough. I don't ever want to ask people to like come on my podcast because I feel like I'm going to bother them. I'm like, you know how many fucking things I've done for all everybody else? She's like, start asking. She's like, this is so stupid, Heather. Because I've always just kind of like stayed in my lane and done my thing. And, you know, I go to work and I'm really a happy person. She's like, you need to start asking for favors because everybody asks you for favors.
I'm big with reciprocation.
I am too. And I just don't know why I can't send the text to be like, hey, you know, want to do this too?
As soon as this podcast is over, you're blocked. So don't bother. No, but I'm big on reciprocation. Like, dude, I've had real fallings out with people about that. Like, it's kind of one of the points of friendship is like, you have to like each other. It's any relationship is one person can't like the other one more. The differentiation can only be about 5%. Mm-hmm. And after that, you're running the, you're, it's going to start showing.
It's interesting too with a lot of these like guys in comedy, because they'll always like, I'll go do their shit, you know, because they know that they want my female audience to be like, oh, fuck yeah, I didn't know about this guy. And then I everyone's always too busy for me. And I'm a fucking good time. So I'm just like, whatever, I just stay in my own lane.
Yeah, I can't, I have real, I'm like, no, if.
I'm kind of, I'm at that point where I'm like, my girl Sam was literally like, no, it's because you're not asking. She's like, ask. And they say, no, who gives a fuck? Like, move on. You've already established yourself and done your own thing.
Well, you know what
God,
I was going to say?
I am like sweating for this right now.
But you know what I was
going to
say about, what I was going to say about the thing about like wanting to be on late night?
Yeah.
I've been talking to people about this lately a lot, is like, that world's kind of fading.
Yes.
Like that. So we all have these dreams of like, and then I'm going to. Johnny Carson's dead.
Right.
Jay Leno's not, doesn't have a show anymore. David Letterman is in Wyoming and Connecticut. It's like, he's these people we had dream, or even SNL, or even like all these things. Like, I'm going to, it's all like old media stuff. Mm-hmm. And you have 750,000 followers on Instagram. That's a late night show.
Oh, yeah. And then when I'm on tour, it's like the best thing in the world because I'm at these shows and I do have a lot of like new fans to stand up who, you know, and predominantly like females who are like, well, I never really was a stand up fan. And then they come and now they're dialed into all these other amazing comedians. It's the best. They're not
form
cynical.
Of entertainment there is, by the way, stand up. Yeah. It's like, you're going to laugh 50 times.
You're going to
if you come to the show.
So much fun.
Go watch a comedy movie. If you laugh three times. I'll give you a ticket to a stand-up show.
And it's like, I always say, I'm like, it's so much fun. We're giggling.
Yeah.
I don't take myself too seriously. Like, I just want to give people a great show. And I love the sense of community. It's like the most fun ever. Because when people come to my show, they dress up, animal print, glitter suits. Like, the guys will come in outfits and they're like, they fucking love it. They're like, I'm out with all the girls. And they have a blast. And then they leave and like, that was the most fun ever. That's my biggest thing. Listen, I'm not going to like change the world. I'm not teaching you something like you never thought about before, but I'm going to make you fucking giggle. God damn it.
That's valuable.
Yeah.
All right. What have you done in terms of, you've been sort of upbeat and happy your whole life. What are things you've done that have made you happier and more, like the most helpful things you've done for your mental health? Obviously, compression sucks.
Yeah, so compression sucks. Yeah. Honestly, knowing when to just turn it off and be by myself, because I have really learned to like value my time.
Is that must be kind of hard in marriage, or did you guys establish that early?
Well, Jeff's great because we can sit in a room and not speak, and he's reading his like golf magazines, and I'm dicking around on the internet, and that is like. My love language is time. I just want to spend time with people. I don't care. We don't have to say a word, but I like to be in the room. But to know when to like turn it off, just to be like, all right, I need 2 hours just to be in silence, to shut the fuck up. Neil, that is what I have learned, to shut the fuck up.
There's also something you said for like just having a body there.
Yeah.
Like, which is why I have a ton of blow up dolls in my house. no, but having just
ton of Beanie Babies as well. Yeah.
Like just someone there, and you don't have to be like communicating.
Mm-hmm.
You can just be like, you're there. You're alive. I'm alive. I'm not in an airplane bathroom.
Right.
But there is something to be said for it. Like it's positive. Okay. What's your dream for yourself? And I don't mean like what's your career goal. I just mean like your dream sort of overall.
I'll tell you right now. I want to have some sort of compound. I want to rehabilitate French bulldogs. That's my dream.
I think they're unrehabilitatable.
You're probably right. I've got two right now that are at a behavioral camp trying to figure out.
I can hear them wheezing from here.
Yeah. I got the healthy ones. But yes, I just want to have like a compound with my friends. And I want to raise healthy kids.
How many friends?
I would say max out probably. Well, okay. Say five friends. So, you know.
And
five
Sarah
couples.
Silverman pitched a very similar thing.
Oh, she
like
did?
Cottages.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Love the cottage idea. There's a place outside of Atlanta called Saranby, and it's kind of like, do you ever hear of Blackberry Farms?
That's where they're going to train the police. Right?
Yes. Yeah,
yes. I follow Atlanta news, guys.
I want to have like a compound at this really cool place called Saranby, and they have like an organic farm and all this shit. And I just want to be able to hang out with my friends and like, you know, deal with our life and raise our children in like a commune.
I've thought about that. It's a great idea, and I've thought about it. And then I've thought about who I would invite.
Uh-huh.
And then I've thought about potential, like, Like, because you don't really know what people are like until you live with them in a compound.
I am still best friends, though, with my best girlfriends from growing up. And, like, literally, we've been friends for 30 years. And so I feel like I could live with them. Okay. Like, I get it.
And they're married?
They're married. All of our husbands are friends. Like, it's...
It works.
We vacation. I have people that I like know I can vacation with. And honestly, I have this big wedding in Italy, and the best compliment I ever got from my wedding, not we love the fireworks, the food was great, all this shit. I've lived so many different places. My New York friends were friends with my LA friends, met my Atlanta friends, met my University of Mississippi friends, all these different parts of my life. The best compliment I got was, I love your friends. Wow, I loved meeting your friends from here. So the fact that, like, at my wedding, I didn't give a fuck how I looked, all that shit. I was literally...
It showed.
I just, fuck you. I've
seen the photos. Sorry, sweetie.
No, I looked very hot. But I literally, at, like, my welcome party, I mean, I was so excited. I was just like, everyone's together and having a good time. Like, if my dad was still alive, yes, I live at home with my mom right now, but... I know that that probably wouldn't have been different. My dad would have been like, y'all live the next door. Like, he just wanted us all together. And there's so many attributes that my dad had that I realize I'm taking on. And that's kind of why I call the special, like, son I never had. Like, now I'm also in this interesting role. I'm in my childhood home. My office was my dad's old office. Mm. And there are moments where I'm looking around.
Did you buy it from your
mom? Yeah, we're buying it currently from my mom. Right. We're redoing everything, and that's...
She's being a real fucking asshole about it, too.
She is nickel and diming me. This redheaded bitch.
Inspectors. Oh, my God.
The inflation. Get the fuck out of here.
And you've had to fight fire with fire, where you have Jeff go into a room before and throw mice down, and then you're like, there's mice everywhere. I'm not giving you a penny.
I'm not giving you a dime. Yeah. Oh, we've been fighting with the HOA, so I'm like, an issue.
Yeah, that's sweet. Well, it seems like you're your dad's daughter.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally. And my sister is the same way, and like his gumption for business and the way she's just like a badass. Like she has, and like his intelligence. I'm more like the sales guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I love to keep the family unit together. But there are moments where I'm like, I've hired all my friends. We're all in a compound. Like that's just, my father.
Yeah. Just have some boundaries. You'll be good.
Yeah. You're
right. Like for real. Cause that's the thing is, the thing with friends is like, it gets a little familiar sometimes. And it's like, hey, I'm your boss still. Right. Like, and then you'll be socializing and you'll be talking to them like they work for you. And it's like, that's wrong also.
Right.
So you got to keep your eye on it.
I got to keep my eye on it. Yes.
I like you a lot. And I had a great time speaking with you.
Neil, thank you for all this. I want you to know I adore you. And I really appreciate this therapy session. And I hope my whole family doesn't hate me after this.
Some of them. Oh, Heather McMahon, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Go to follow her.